Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to our latest episode of the Early Excellence podcast. This week we've picked out an episode to re-release that will really get you thinking about your practice and provision. So here you go, here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Evan McCormick as we talk all about inspiring outdoor learning. Evan, how are you doing?
Hi, Andy. Really good to be joining you again. Thanks for having me.
It's very good to see you. Good to see you. Thank you for joining us again. So we're going to be talking all about outdoors, aren't we? Which I know is one of your passions. Just before we get on to that, let's for people who didn't listen, I know this is the second time you've joined us for a podcast episode, but for people who haven't listened to that yet, just give us a brief introduction. If you wouldn't mind, would that be all right?
Yeah, of course, no problem. So my name is Evan McCormick, and I'm currently a lecturer in primary education at Leeds Trinity University. And my areas of specialism are EYFS and English. And I am relatively new to the role. I joined in September of this academic year, and I moved straight from school. So I was previously in school as a phase leader for early years. So quite new to academia. This is the second time that we're recording the podcast, but we also met previously whenever I was in the previous role as a phase leader, because we had you in for some outdoor consultancy.
That's right. I remember you taught a very big school. I forget the name now. What was the name of the school that you taught at?
Old Mole Primary School in Manchester.
In Manchester, yeah. Of course. Yes. You taught a very big school with quite a large EYFS within there, didn't you? And quite a large outdoor space as well.
Yeah. So a shared reception classroom and a shared nursery space. And then the outdoor area was a large space shared between nursery and reception. And that's why we had you in for the consultancy to look at our outdoor area specifically. Because the outdoor area had been a focus for a while, we knew we wanted to make changes. And by making changes, it was ending up that we were just bringing indoor resources outside, making printed resources, asking parents for anything that they would have at home. So the time had come and we realized that whilst all that is great, it could only go so far, and we needed some clear investment of time and money in purchasing resources. So we contacted you, and you came in and you visited us in school.
That's right, I remember. And it was you had a huge outdoor space with kind of lots of pathways and kind of lots of different spaces to it. But I think what we did was we got to the heart of the kind of the key principles of what we needed to think about there. So we talked about, the organization of the storage, the resources, about the differences between inside and outdoor practice. We talked about really thinking about what young children will want to do, what will drive their interest, what will fire up their interest, and so on. In fact, lots of the things that we talked about on that day, we're going to be talking about as part of this podcast, aren't we? When we met originally to talk about the podcast and about you coming on the podcast, and you said, outdoors would be a great area to talk about. One of the things that we chatted about was you talked about your work with your students, and you talked about introducing to your students the idea of how outdoor practice is different to indoor practice. And it was really interesting. You shared ideas of how you do that with your students by using photographs. And I wondered whether you wouldn't mind starting off with that. Just talk us through it. How do you do that? How do you get that idea across about the difference between effective indoor and effective outdoor practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Leeds Trinity, we're quite lucky in that students can qualify as either early year specialists or later year specialists. So not all students will have school-based training in early years, but they'll all visit early years during their placements at some point. And so they should have some understanding of what continuous provision looks like, what outdoor provision looks like. But with all students having sessions focused on outdoor learning in the early years, we find that it gives them a solid grounding in early years pedagogy and understanding of the curriculum so that they can take it forward, because all students may be teaching in any year group later in their careers. So within those sessions, I started off by showing all students two pictures. So two very different pictures, both beautiful spaces, but different in what they're offering children in the outdoors. So the first picture was the Early Excellence Shed, so taken directly from your website. So including those large scale crates of different sizes that connect together in different ways, tubing, the hands-on large brushes, the den making materials as well. And then the second image is again a beautifully organized space, but essentially it's an indoor classroom that's brought outdoors. So tables that have what I would call activities on them, books, worksheets, a sand tray for small scale sand play. And whenever I first show the students the two pictures, quite often when I'm asking them to consider which is the quality early years outdoor provision, they often go for the space that looks like an indoor classroom that's just brought outside. And when I start to pick at that with them, well, they say, well, what effort has the teacher put into organizing the space? They look and they see the indoor space as more effort being applied to it. And then they ask, well, what do children do with those resources that are offered in the shed? Because they can see with the activities that are on the tables, the learning outcome is very clear and evident to them. But with the shed, it takes a little bit more imagination and more thought. So then discussion from that point leads to, well, what is the purpose of outdoor learning and how is it different from indoor learning? And then we start to pick out, well, the value of outdoor learning is that children have freedom, they have a space, there's an opportunity for social and emotional learning, collaboration with peers, and each of them are able to boil it down to, yes, children behave differently whenever they're outdoors, and they gain different experiences whenever they are outdoors. And then we're able to confer from that the indoor space that's just brought outside isn't adequate, and it's not a unique learning opportunity, and it's not harnessing the power of the outdoor environment.
I think that's really interesting. I like the way as well that you support them in finding that, getting to that point themselves almost, you know, so that you kind of, you have the conversation about the two photographs and you spark that conversation, you spark that discussion, and then it leads quite naturally into, well, actually, what are we wanting for our outdoor space? What do children do when they're outdoors? Do they learn in the same way as they do when they're learning inside? What do you tend to see in terms of their learning behaviors, etc.? And then kind of gradually and quite gently, I think, move towards that idea, well, actually, well, what do they need then? Rather than it kind of being a very standard, you telling them that this is as it is. And I think it's more powerful that way, isn't it? That actually you've kind of helped them to get there themselves to a certain extent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also part of it is realizing that there's no issue with the experiences that are offered in the second picture with the indoor activities. They should be offered, but it just needs to be indoors. And then you start to talk about how indoor learning and outdoor learning go hand in hand, whilst it's different experiences that are offered. They need to be thought of together and not completely separate. There needs to be a way of, you know, supporting learning indoors through the outdoors and vice versa, and working on maybe the same learning objectives, whether it's indoors or outdoors.
Yes, no, that makes perfect sense. And I think a really good starting point. So then having got that conversation going, and presumably this is probably over a number of different sessions, having introduced that idea and talked with your students about kind of what will it look like, and, you know, getting that idea of, you know, how it needs to be different to inside practice, where do you then move on to? Presumably you move on to that kind of idea of how you might introduce sort of key elements. So key elements of outdoor provision or outdoor practice. Now, if so, what's your starting point for that?
So the students have two sessions specifically on outdoor learnings in early years. So there's a lot to cram in. And with one of the first aspects that we look at is how often children have access to the outdoors. How do we organize the access to the outdoors? And I know the teachers in schools often have this dilemma. They're aware that free flow is the best available option. The research says that offering children free flow between the indoors and outdoors, it allows them to, you know, many things. They can exercise autonomy in terms of decision-making, their agency over what they're doing and when, and building that independence at such a young age, not being told what to do all the time. You know, it has a profound impact. But also, in terms of holistic development, free flow allows you then to bring indoor learning outdoors and vice versa. I remember whenever you visited us in school, you gave an example of a kite. So if children want a kite whenever they're outdoors and they come out to that realization, whenever they're outdoors, how are they going to make it? Well, they're going to have to go inside and physically make it at the creative table and then go outside. And, you know, that's a simple example, but examples like that crop up all the time whenever children are outdoors. But then also I'm aware that free flow often causes logistical...
it's difficult to manage, isn't it?
Whenever teachers are in school. So I've also seen it work where children decide... I don't know what you think about this, but children decide at the start of the play session if they would like to go outside or if they'd like to stay inside. So then you're still respecting individual preference in terms of children deciding, do I want to go out in that weather? What type of mood am I in? Are my friends? So it's agency, but again, within...
But it's a slightly more controlled version of agency, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not against that at all. I think when you certainly get to quite large numbers of children, you know, sometimes the settings that I've worked with where you've got, you know, it could be an early years unit with quite easily 90 children, you've probably need to have some kind of way of organizing it, organizing the logistics of it. But you've got to be quite careful that it doesn't become a sort of a frenzied race to be the first to be outside. You know, that's what I would be against. You know, that's when it doesn't work well. When you have things like sort of bands or stickers, or you've got to put your name on a Velcro board or whatever it might be, and the first 10 children or 15 children get to be outside, what you end up with is usually the quickest children getting to be outside. And I don't think that's right. I think you get some children who just want to win the race. They're not that interested in being outside. They're just really competitive and they just want to get out there. They just want to be the first to be out there rather than actually get out there. I think you're right. I think ways of kind of talking about, well, actually, what do you want to do? Where do you want to be? As a way of kind of organizing it gently, I think actually is quite a good way to do it.
Yeah. So then whenever I talk to my students about how they see that being managed in school, they have seen some of them free flow, some of them see children deciding at the start of the play session. Also, some of them see children being in set groups and going out whenever they're simply told to. A few students have shared that experience. And we have to, as a lecturer and working with schools, you have to respect the pedagogical decisions that all schools are making. But we also want the students to be critical of what they're seeing during in their school-based training as well. So I then lead discussion to start thinking about, well, does that limit autonomy and agency if the children have no decision-making or an awareness of the learning that they're engaging with, if they're just simply told to go outdoors? And does that create disengagement? Does it create stress if you're told that you need to go outside, or does it create tension amongst friendship, amongst children as well? So asking them to think critically about the access to the outdoors is usually one of my starting points. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. And you're right. I think so many people do it in so many different ways and organizing it in different ways. And it also has implications for things like the timetable, for things like access to resources, etc. And I wondered whether, you know, in terms of your work with students, do you go, I know you were saying you only have sort of a couple of sessions where you're trying to sort of fit as much as you can in. Do you talk about that kind of introduction to the resources? You know, is that something that you do with your students? You do that kind of, you know, if you're there and you're the adult within the outdoor area, you know, maybe at the start of the school year within reception, do you talk to them about that introduction of resources and how important that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So a key part of the sessions is looking at the resources that are offered and how they're stored as well. And the key learning point for all students at this point is that the scale of the resources is really important. The larger the building materials that are outdoors, the better they are going to be, the more productive the children are going to be with them. So, for example, blocks, wooden planks, crates, those types of resources. And then I get the students to brainstorm, you know, how could those resources be used by children? And they come up with endless ideas, which is, you know, key. It's that they're open-ended resources and they can be used in such various ways. And I always refer to this example whenever I'm trying to demonstrate it. So I talk about there's the construction area indoors and there's construction area outdoors. And whenever you have a child who's playing indoors in the construction area and the bricks are, you know, just really small and you've got loads of them, well, they're going to gather a few bricks that are theirs. And they're not going to share them with their peers. They want to build a tower or a castle, whatever it is that is theirs. The friend can't touch it. Or if they do touch it, I might get upset. But then whenever children are outdoors, well, there might be only 10 crates and 10 planks. There's limited resources. I won't be able to lift it by myself or carry it. So you have to collaborate with others, you have to share, and then once you've built your castle or your house or whatever it is with the large-scale materials, then you want your friends to come inside and you want to share. And the same parallel exists for creative activities, you know, working in the sand or water. Children tend to want to collaborate whenever the materials are on a larger scale.
And I was thinking as well, I think you're absolutely right. And the other thing that it strikes me is that whenever we get that physical challenge, children collaborate. You know, that whenever you've got to work to lift something or to transport something, there's a degree of collaboration. And if we're wanting, you know, if we're wanting team building skills, we do things outside. You know, and that's not just for early years, but actually in other areas of school as well. You know, if you're wanting your year sixes to work in teams, what do we do? Well, we take them on, you know, we take them on outward bound courses. You know, we do great, you know, we do things outdoors, don't we? On a big scale with big things that involve lifting and carrying and transporting and physical challenge, because actually that's when we see certain characteristics. It's also when we see children collaborating and working in teams. And importantly, it's when we see problem solving. Children problem solve when they work outdoors, when they use things that are physically challenging, when they're having to work together. They problem solve together. And when you have children problem solving together in a collaborative way, I think you've got a rich context for learning, because you've got the drive, you've got the curiosity, you've got the collaboration, you've got the communication and language or the need for it. You've got all sorts of rich possibilities there. So yeah, no, I think you're absolutely on the right track with the larger materials, definitely.
Yeah. And then whenever we think about what the resources actually are and what you're offering children, I then talk about, well, children actually need to be taught often how to use the resources whilst they might have imagination, they might be creative. We can also observe and respond to their interests and extend their learning, and not force resources to be used in a certain way, but allow them to be open-ended by responding to children's interests. So I then talk about, well, how would you model using this particular resource? And we also go into depth with risky play, because I think this is it's a stickler for our students, because they've got that they need to care for children, and they're responsible for their well-being and safety. And they often see that as the priority outdoors instead of extending children's learning and using it as learning opportunities. So we talk about managing risky play like jumping and climbing by establishing boundaries, and creating clear rules and how to manage that over time. So allow children to really understand those boundaries and rules and, you know, love policing it themselves. And then the students are able to reflect on those experiences and say, oh, well, whenever I was outdoors, I saw children doing that. Yeah.
Yes. No, I think that's a really, really important point. I think that clarity and consistency, that both of those things are key when we're talking about outdoor learning. And it makes me think about, in some settings that I've worked with and supporters, there's a kind of an ongoing dilemma, which is that they have their outdoor area and it's all organized. They've got all of the resources, but the children use the same space for lunch times. And it kind of causes this bit of a kind of slight bit of friction, which is that actually the children don't see it in quite the same way when they've just had their lunch as they do when it's kind of during classroom time. And that's compounded by the adults who are in that space with the children at that time, who perhaps have not had the training that the teachers and the support staff within the EYFS setting have had. And the children are using the resources in ways that you wouldn't necessarily want them to be, or that they are, you know, that the behavior is more challenging or whatever it might be. And I think it, whenever we talk about this sort of consistency, as you were saying, I think that kind of conversation all often comes up. We've got to think about consistency, and that's could be about lunchtime staff, about staff. You know, if you are going to use the same space, make sure the staff know how to use the resources and what the expectations are of those resources. Or if it's possible, then use a different space for your lunch times, really.
Yeah. So this is something that we talked about whenever you visited me back at school, Andy. So I was asking you, we need to find a way to organize the resources so that children don't access them during lunchtime, or could only access certain resources. And you said, well, you've got such a huge space that wraps around the building, and there's a beautiful physical area around the corner why don't you utilize that for outdoor lunchtime play? And then that space became dedicated to physical play and was used during lunchtimes. And we find that having that separate space for lunchtime, it was more manageable for the adults that were outdoors, the lunchtime organizers. But also the children, they played a select few physical games. Physical resources were offered for game playing. And it meant that they all wanted to interact with each other, you know, talk with each other, build games with each other. And it became just a really nice point in the day where the children got together. And then they still had their continuous provision in the afternoon. So it was a really worthwhile suggestion. And I would encourage listeners who, for maybe the outdoor space isn't working during their lunchtimes, to think about whether they can offer a separate space for children to play whenever it is lunchtime.
Yeah. Do you know, I'd forgotten we'd had that conversation. Completely forgot. I knew it was something that we were going to be talking about today, but I'd completely forgotten that we'd had that conversation previously when I visited your setting. No, that's great. That's good to know that that had that impact, though. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a recommendation that you gave and had a really, really strong impact. And it meant that we were able to manage children's learning whenever it was continuous provision, because they were familiar with the resources in a productive way. So they knew how they would be used, and they respected the resources as well. Or lunchtime organizers were really hardworking, and you know, they wanted the best for the children. But like you say, they didn't have that training, and we didn't have the capacity to offer that training. So yeah, it had a really strong impact.
That's good to hear. Yeah, really good to hear. What about, you said that I think that you only have, say, a couple of sessions to be able to really kind of get into outdoor learning with your students. But I wondered whether you got onto planning with them. You know, did you get onto, you know, planning for outdoors and what that might look like? I'm just interested to know, because I think I often find that when we talk about planning as part of EYFS practice, I think people often assume that as soon as you mention planning, people assume that we're talking about indoors. You know, it's that sort of straight away thinking about what the short term, you know, that this week I'm doing this indoors. It's generally about inside. Whereas, of course, outdoors can be planned for and should be planned for. And so I was kind of interested to know, you know, is that something you managed to get into your work with your students?
Yeah, absolutely. And for any students that used early years as a driver for their dissertation, they'll need to plan some early years outdoor learning experiences as well. So it was very much part of the sessions. But what I started by emphasizing was that there's a need for weekly planning, yes, but the continuous provision outdoors needs to have a foregrounding of planning that exists and staff are aware of, that all practitioners understand. And what I mean by that is that, is there a clear understanding of resources that are continually offered that make up your continuous provision? What exactly do they offer children? So how are they intended to be used? And how different resources complement each other? How are they organized? How does the construction area go with the water area, for example? What specific resources can be used to foster experiences in particular areas of learning? And whenever I built a document that explained this in my previous role, I used the Early Excellence Outdoor Learning Guide as a foundation, because there's some great detail in there. And because we had so many of the Early Excellence resources, then it was directly transferable. But what I included then, because it was a shared space, where nursery and reception children both played alongside each other and with each other. I included progression then from nursery to reception. So how might nursery children access a particular resource, and how might a reception child, how could their learning be extended, for example? And it's also important to have that continuous provision long-term plan, because you want to also be responsive to the weather and the changes in it. So which resources stick around whenever it's winter? Which resources come out whenever it's summertime? You don't want to be left bare whenever it's windy or it's snowing outside. You want to know what resources you have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You want to be completely responsive, don't you? Yeah, it's getting the balance right between kind of what's going to be there all of the time, day in, day out, what's always going to be there, and why is it going to be there? Because although you've got, you could have, a, like as you had, a you know, a large outdoor space, you've still got, you don't want to waste any of that space. You don't want to have things in that area that actually doesn't really belong there, doesn't really lead to effective learning, or could lead to a, you know, could be a distraction, you know. So you've got to think about actually what earns its place there. And so within that conversation, there'll be some things that when you do that kind of audit of what's already there, there'll be some things that you think, well, actually, you know, we don't need to keep that. That doesn't really add a lot of value. So, you know, for example, one of the things that is often the case is quite often people will have in their outdoor space a kind of house-like structure with, you know, a couple of windows and a door. And whenever we talk about, you know, what do the children do with it? You know, what do they get out of it? Because it's nice to, it looks like the sort of thing that's nice to have. But when we talk about, well, what do the children actually do with it? Pretty much every time, every adult will say, to be honest, they don't do a lot with it. You know, children will go in and it becomes this sort of low level kind of play of kind of closing the door on somebody else and holding the door closed whilst waving through the window at your friends who are outside and they can't get in, you know, that kind of play. Whereas actually, you know, giving the children crates, planks of wood, giving the children different sorts of crates so they can create their own structure. It could be a den, or it could be a house, or it could be a trap for baddies, or whatever it might be. That's got much more scope than giving the children all, something that's already been created that actually ends up being a bit of a distraction, I think. So yeah, I completely agree with you. I think making everything kind of earn its place by planning it, you know, planning out, you know, what are the learning possibilities of these resources and these materials? What will the children do with them? How does that link to the different areas of learning? And also thinking about the adult role, I think is key. And you're right. The Early Excellence Outdoor Continuous Provision Guide, I think certainly does do that. You know, it gives you that information, and it gives you a very good starting point if you're looking at auditing your materials and thinking about, well, what have you got? What sorts of resources should I have? And, you know, how should we organize them? I think it gives you a very good starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then following discussion on that basis planning, I then start to talk about what weekly planning might look like in the outdoors. And for my early year students who have experience in early years, I emphasize that it's not the same as indoors. You mightn't need to plan with the same level of detail, but there should still then be that planning and an awareness of what is taking place in the outdoors. And as a basis for that, we talk about the need to observe and respond to children. And we talk about, is that in the moment or is that a week later? So do we observe children having an interest and then think, oh, I'm going to include that in next week's planning, or do we act in the moment to extend their interests? And if we want to act in the moment to extend their interests, so for example, if, you know, the children have built a ramp with planks and the crates, well, is there a car to run it down? Or are children able to go inside and grab a car to run it down? So responding to children's interests in that way. in the moment. But then again, there might be the weekly planning aspect to it. So for example, if children are interested in the natural environment on a particular day, the next day or the next week, can you have, you know, gathered some magnifying glasses, bug hunting kits, set up some bug hunting sheets for them to tick off, writing materials, whatever it is, you know, something that takes a little bit more planning than just acting in the moment.
I also wonder as well, I think it works particularly well if you're thinking about the link between adult interaction with children and that stage of planning. I think one of the things that we're often very aware of is that it can be quite challenging to have interactions with children outdoors, either because the play itself is very physical and they're constantly moving, or because actually, you know, you're trying to manage lots of different things happening around you. And sometimes play can be quite difficult to become engaged in if you don't follow what it is that they're doing. You know, if they're clearly having their own ideas, but it's quite difficult to engage in it. You can't quite make sense of it. And one of the things that I often find that we don't do enough of is we try to have conversations with children in the outdoor space as it's happening, and that's fine and it can work. But if it is challenging, then don't feel that that moment is lost, because actually it's possible when the children come back to the carpet and you gather them together, you know, after we've tidied up, we come back to the carpet at the end of the session, then could be the perfect opportunity to be talking about what you've been doing. And I think that is something that's often missed, that time to talk just after we've had that play, when children can say, oh, well, we were making ramps, or we were building this and it was a trap for baddies, or we were doing whatever it was, helps us as adults to have a way in to understand what the children were doing. But it also means that we can then be involved in conversations with the children about what they might need next and what sorts of things we could be adding in, you know, like you say, as an enhancement, as a weekly plan. What could we add in? Well, the children could be involved in that discussion, which I think adds to it.
On our previous podcast together, we talked about plan, play, review, or a plan, do, review cycle. So where children actively talk about and plan what they're going to do during their continuous provision session. And then when they return to the carpet following the play session, we're talking about what did you achieve? What did you learn? What did you create? Who did you play with? So many conversations that can be had. And absolutely, the teacher's observations of children can be an aspect of that, I think.
Yes, I think so. But and even if people do it, we don't think necessarily as much about outdoors. And yet, it does provide a good context for that. No, very interesting. Okay, which brings us quite nicely onto the adult role, doesn't it? Within your work with your students, do you then talk about the adult role? You know, do you get into that that idea of what is the role of the adult outdoors? I think it's certainly an interesting one because it's, as I said before, I think it's quite challenging. And an adult within an outdoor area, it is quite a challenging role. And I think we have to be quite kind to ourselves.
Yeah. And like I suggested before, they have an anxiety around safety in the outdoors, the students tend to have. So from that, I need to emphasize that whenever you are outdoors with early years children, yes, you need to keep them safe, but that's not necessarily by policing them. It's by setting up routines and structures that means they play safely all the time, rather than you trying to always police them or tell them not to do something. It needs to be about the everyday routines and how they understand how they use the outdoor space and resources. And then if children are using the resources and space safely, then that frees you up as the adult who's outdoors to actively engage with the children. But I think the reflection that you make that you don't necessarily need to be involved in all aspects of children play whenever they're outdoors. Sometimes children, whenever they're outdoors, they don't want an adult be involved in a certain game. So you don't have to get involved. You're able to sit back and observe. But if we're thinking about how do we actually engage children in learning, how do we harness learning opportunities that arise, the foremost of that is encouraging exploration. So we all have seen those children who go outside and they've got their hands in their pocket and they're not too sure what to do. They just need a little bit of encouragement. So just asking, can you give this a go today, can go a long way. Or have you noticed this? Have you seen that? And then supporting them by asking open-ended questions. So what can you see? What does it smell like? Especially if you're in the mud kitchen or whatever it is, you're supporting that thinking and allowing them to vocalize. And then also, I think generally just establishing and setting up games and working with individuals and small groups. So working with a few children in the mud kitchen, setting them up and, you know, they're making a cake that's going in the oven, and then moving on whenever it's time and interacting with a few more children. So you've got all these rich learning opportunities going around the outdoor space, and you as the adult aren't stuck to any particular child or group, but you're able to move around the space and ensure that children are engaging with the learning opportunities that are offered.
Absolutely. It struck me as well, although it can sometimes be challenging to be involved in conversations with children in an outdoor context, there are times when actually it's easier outdoors than it is inside. You know, the sort of the big physical nature that we talked about before of the resources, so the opportunities for lifting, for carrying, for transporting, means that actually adults can kind of roll their sleeves up and just get in there and get involved. You know, so if the children are making a structure of towers for their water play, for different heights and gradients, you know, then the adult actually can be seen by the children to be somebody who actually is really useful to know and is really useful to have around because they're taller and they're stronger. You know, so the adult can say, well, I'll hold this, you go and get another bucket. I'll make sure this doesn't fall down. Don't worry about that. I've got this. You go and get the next watering can. I'll carry on. And because you're useful to them, you lose some of the awkwardness that is sometimes there around adults engaging with children whilst they're playing. Because actually you're useful, so you just become part of their play. You become part of what they're doing. And because you're part of it, you've got that closeness. You're not awkwardly standing kind of to one side and observing as they're doing. You're both engaged and involved whilst also observing. And you're having the conversations too. So it's the perfect combination of all of those things, I think.
And I think from being engaged at that level with children's play, you're doing many things there. You're modeling how the resources should be used, which we already identified as important. And you're able to model how to manage risk, and modeling how to talk to each other outdoors with appropriateness, and, you know, modeling those interactions amongst one another, and, you know, displaying that we've got a shared responsibility for taking care of the resources that we have outdoors as well, I think. So, yeah, being involved at that level is really important.
Yeah. You know, I can tell from what you're saying that actually you give your students such a good starting point. This is really rich information, isn't it? You know, you think about actually at the start of your teaching career, to have such a starting point in terms of those key principles of what does outdoor learning look like? How is it planned for? What's your role outdoors? And, you know, really thinking through it, you know, not just delivering it to them, but actually really reflecting on it and considering it, and then having experiences and coming back, you know, give your students such a good starting point in terms of that teaching journey. Now, really interesting stuff, really important stuff.
I think a next step for us is to have some of the resources hands-on, those early excellence resources, and for them to, you know, work with hands-on, which would be, you know, really bring the sessions to light in future.
Well, that, I mean, that's certainly something we could look at. And we've done it before for certainly for higher education colleges and settings like that, where we've done a room plan for them and things like that, where we've kind of created an early years environment,
yeah,
as a space for them to be able to take the students into. We've done it very much around indoors, but we could also do something similar for outdoors. Yeah, it would be really exciting to do that. Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Evan. It's been really, really good to talk to you. Really interesting. It's great. It's great to hear from a slightly different perspective from a higher education point of view, and kind of work your work with your students. I think makes it really interesting to listen to what you're saying.
It's been lovely to join you again. Thanks for having me.
So there you go. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you found the episode useful. Now you can stay in touch with all things Early Excellence by joining our mailing list and also, of course, following us on all of the social media platforms as well. Okay, have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.